Welcome to the Imperfect Podcast, where we discuss masculinity and manhood more intentionally and purposefully. On this episode, episode 5, I have Godwin, someone from I've known since high school. And in our conversation, we go into depth about his experiences in the Army Reserves, traveling alone, masculinity, manhood, a lot of the experiences and ins and outs of positions like public services, from firemen to policemen to EMS, because those are like the spaces that he wants to go. And we kind of dig deep into the masculinity in those industries. I really enjoyed this conversation. I learned a lot selfishly about the reserves and whatnot, and his perspective on that and how he's grown since high school. So it was overall an amazing conversation. Listen to this on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, or anywhere podcasts are available. Please leave a review if you can. It does a lot for me and the show in terms of getting us recognized and on the store. And if you want to be on the show or have any amazing topic ideas, message me on IG at The Imperfect Pod. But for now, I'll dive in. I'm with Godwin. Godwin, why don't you just introduce yourself a bit?
Yeah, sure. I'm Godwin. One day I was just listening to Luke's podcast and I had the crazy idea of, complimenting him because I found it really interesting. And then he just asked me like, hey, if you want to come on anytime, it's cool. And I thought it would be interesting to share my perspective on masculinity and all the controversial topics surrounding that.
Yeah.
About me, so I knew Luke from high school. We were in choir together.
Yes, throwback.
And as he said, I played guitar and I sang. I was really into that. I played a lot of talent shows. And then at the end of grade 11, I joined the Army Reserve, which is, for those who don't know, it's like a part-time military. You can choose to work full-time in the summer. Did my basic training, did my basic infantry course. When I started university, I did my parachutist course and my mountain operations course, winter warfare course, basic machine gunners course. And now that I'm finished university, I studied a bachelor's of music education. I worked as a professional music teacher for a year, and then now I'm trying to be a firefighter. So, my life is pretty, it's a mix of a lot of things, but I've always believed in doing what you want and doing what interests you. You don't always have to follow a straight path.
Yeah. I've always actually been really interested in that Army side of you because, growing up in high school, I think I always thought of you as like a singer, as like the artsy guy. And then all of a sudden I knew you as a guy who was in the Army Reserves. And I'm like, this doesn't really seem to match a lot of what I guess the school or what I thought or perceived about you in terms of like a masculine sense. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually really excited to dig deeper into that, in our conversations. But I guess going back to the start where you said, you wanted to share your perspective, you're listening to the podcast. We hadn't talked for a while. So kind of what drew you to the podcast in the first place? Like what made you kind of reach out to me at first?
Yeah, so I think one day I just saw you just started the podcast and I listened to the first few episodes. I was like, oh, hey, that's Gautham. Mm-hmm. I know him from high school. Let me listen to that. And I thought it was very interesting because I've always kind of thought about what masculinity was to me. As you said, like, I was a singer and then joined the Army for some reason.
Yeah.
And those are two different sides of the spectrum, right? As some would perceive, like singing and playing music is a little more feminine, some would say.
Mm-hmm.
And then joining the Army, it's stereotypically masculine. You get to fight, you get to whatever, like with class, like alpha male mentalities. So that's something that I've always thought was a little maybe weird about myself is that I was into both sides of the spectrum. And that's why when you offered me to come speak, I was really down to, because I feel like I'm not really normal.
Yeah.
Not really like a stereotypical person, so.
Yeah. And so what kind of drew you to apply for the Army Reserves in the first place? Like, you said you applied in grade 11 and got in. Was there like a specific defining moment in your life in grade 11 that drew you to it? Or like you see the ads on TV kind of thing?
Yeah. So I always wanted to be a policeman.
Okay.
So when I was young, my mom used to take me to shake policemen's hands when... we would see them on the street, and I looked into that starting grade 11. I was like, what do I want to do with my life? And then I found the Army Reserve. I found out that to be a policeman, you had to have a lot of education, but for the Army Reserve, you only need to be 16 with parental consent. So I talked to my parents. They're surprisingly okay with it. And I brought my mom to the recruiting center. And that was that. I think I just wanted to try something new.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to, you know, be different. I wanted to explore that side of my personality that wanted to be more, you know, quote unquote masculine.
Mm-hmm.
I started working out before that, and I was like, oh, what can I do with this newfound passion of mine, which was exercising? I love the camaraderie. The team aspect of that is what really drew me in. Like, I loved working with people. I loved working with my hands,
mm-hmm.
Working towards a greater thing than myself, serving the country. It just all made sense to me at the time.
Yeah.
And it still does. I love the Army. I'm still serving.
Okay.
If you're wondering. Just on a part-time basis. But yeah, that's what initially drew me in when I was in grade 11.
And then, I guess, out of my own ignorance, like, what is the Army Reserves? What does it mean that you're still serving? Like, do you get discharged and whatnot if there was a situation like that? Kind of like, can you go into more depth about that?
Yeah, sure. So the Army Reserves is a part-time military commitment. In the Canadian Armed Forces, there's the reserves and there's full-time. So it obviously reserves is part-time, full-time is the regular force. For me, the minimum requirement as a reservist is 1 weeknight a month and 1 weekend a month where you do training. Of course, you can do a lot more than that. I usually go every week and every weekend. Not every weekend, but like the 1 weekend a month. There's also opportunities for courses, like I told you about. So my basic infantry course was 7 weeks straight. My parachutist course was 3 weeks. Basic machine gunners was 3 weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And to answer your question, you're not discharged after a period of time. You stay in until you either quit or retire or you're kicked out. You don't sign a contract or anything. You can leave whenever you want. And in case of deployments, you're not forced to go. It's all voluntary. There's a lot of people in my unit that went to Afghanistan, Bosnia, but now that's done. Some people have been going to Poland, Iraq, and just waiting for the next thing to start up, I guess.
Yeah. So do you pay attention to a lot of those world affairs or current affairs because of your role in the reserve? Or like, do you reach out to your friends that are in these places or have been discharged?
Discharged? Like deployed? Like
deployed, sorry. Okay. Yeah, deployed.
I would say I pay a little more attention to it than when I wasn't in the Army, but I'm not like a world issues kind of guy.
Yeah,
I'm interested in what's happening, but not to the point where it really bothers me.
Yeah.
And yeah, I do reach out to some of my friends who have been overseas. I'm really interested in Afghanistan particularly because that was the most recent, you know, conflict that we were a part of. I just like hearing their perspectives on it.
Mm-hmm. And when you're in the reserves, is it, especially when you're 16, are you with people that are your age or are you kind of in a wide variety of age groups while you're there?
Oh, definitely a wide age group. I was 16 when I joined. I started basic training and I think the oldest guy in my course was 45.
Okay.
I was also youngest rifleman in my unit for like 2 years.
Wow.
So it really makes you grow up fast because you immediately have to start working as a team with, you know, people who have had a million times more life experience than you.
Yeah.
And you just have to deal with it. That's the thing. You just got to deal with it and adapt. You find a way to adapt and overcome. You find a way to make yourself grow up,
mm-hmm.
be more mature. Don't take things so personally and just do your job.
Yeah. So do you feel like in your development because of the reserves, like there was a lot of mentorship, you grew up as a man quickly, you've kind of stated that already. But like in terms of those emotions, I guess, did you ever feel like emotions were on the back burner or like how did you have to handle that aspect of the role? I'm really interested in the framework of it because sometimes I do think that, you know, with things like the Army, you do have to have that more thick skin. Like it's not really an option to not have it. But nowadays it's like when it comes to being stoic or, you know, not being emotional enough, there's kind of the stigma around not having emotions. So like kind of what's your navigation of that issue or I guess topic within the Army and your experiences there?
So personally, my experiences with like emotion, having emotion in the Army, at times you have to put it on the back burner just because, you know, other things are more important.
Mm-hmm.
But there's all kinds of people in the Army. Like it's not like the movies where everyone is just like an alpha male mentality. Just, oh, kill, kill, kill. I'm gonna, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There's people who are really, really humble. There's people who are, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? People who are very empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in my job, so as an infantryman, I guess the textbook definition is to close with and destroy the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say in my job in particular, there's a little more of the putting the emotions aside. But for me personally, I've always been pretty normal working. But for sure, it's affected my stoicism.
Mm-hmm.
Just because when you're on parade or when you're being inspected, you can't be like laughing or anything. You just have to have a straight face.
Yeah.
Just be stoic.
And was that like trained into you? Was that like grilled into you? Like, how do you become that? Because honestly, I don't think I could do it unless out of like straight up fear that I was going to like get yelled at, I guess. Like, I don't know if I'd be able to hold a straight face just because of my personality.
I watched this video recently of an American police department and they're all standing there and they're not supposed to make any facial expression. And this training officer comes by with like a rubber duck and squeezes it in front of them and tries to make them laugh. And what you just said reminds me of that. But no, we didn't have anything like that. We just, I guess it's kind of passively trained into you.
Mm-hmm.
There's no direct, you know, there's no direct kind of exercise that you do to train into that. Yeah, there's nothing like that.
Wow. Like, I don't know. I personally, I don't think I could imagine going through that, just from like a, well, one, a physical perspective, but then two, yeah, I've always found the army just so interesting, because everything you do see in the TV and ads and all that is very no emotions. Like, you have to have a straight face all the time. You have to be prepared. And, like, you know, a lot of people come back with... The thing is, it's ironic how people will come back with, like, severe mental health or illnesses, like PTSD. Or, you know, in... You know, you hear stories, but in the trenches, you have to be very vulnerable with each other in the line of duty, because you need to understand why you're protecting someone. You have to understand... what people's like weaknesses and fears are, and just overcome those together. And so you kind of talked a lot about the team aspect of you like the collaboration and the camaraderie, yeah. Right? Of the army. So kind of what got you into that? Like, what have your experiences been in terms of that experience with sharing with other guys, hearing their stories of battle or whatnot, like, what have been the most exciting moments for you in terms of learning about what it is to be a man?
Yeah, so in the trenches, let's go back to that. Obviously, I have never fought in trench warfare. Yeah. I've just trained in it. So just most recently, I was sharing a trench with a friend of mine. He's a doctor in his civilian career.
Wow.
Yeah, so I talked to him all night, and we were freezing our butts off. It was raining. We were just stuck in a hole, like, just sitting there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really interesting to just be so vulnerable with each other. We both know we're both going through the exact same thing. We're suffering. And I think people open up when they're suffering and they know you're going through the same thing. Does that make sense? Like, they know that whatever they're feeling, you're feeling as well, and there's no reason to hide anything at that point. But yeah, so we just started talking about our lives, our past experiences, our experiences with the army, our experiences with our relationships. We never really got into masculinity, mm-hmm. per se, but I think just from talking to him, you could see the vulnerability aspect through that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a lot of things in the army that will make someone vulnerable, for mm-hmm. sure. And I think the camaraderie aspect kind of correlates with vulnerability, because you know you can trust anyone that you've gone through the same experiences with.
Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to, I guess, the bond and the camaraderie that is formed in those relationships, does it really offer you like a very... Do you feel like you have a very strong support system of men in your life?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's so many guys that I know I can trust, that I work with. There's women that work in the military as well. Mm-hmm. Just, I think in my unit, there's like four.
Yeah.
More coming nowadays. But yeah, when I was doing my trades courses, like basic training and infantry qualifications, I've been with those guys for 6-7 years now, and I think those are the core group of guys that I could tell anything to.
Mm-hmm.
I think even if you don't work with someone for that amount of time, just being in the army with them and having the same experiences with each other makes you trust each other more, and it'll expand your group of guys that you can trust.
Mm-hmm. I've always found it really interesting in terms of, you know, those group male bonding experiences and roles, and I find the strength of bond so amazing, but then I also find on the other opposing end how you might have guys or workforces or anything like that protecting each other too much. And, you know, you hear about nowadays in, you know, police units about how guys will be defending their partners because they care a lot about their partner, but they know their partner did something wrong. And it's this, I've always found the total opposite ends of the spectrum, how they balance out in terms of that relationship. Like, I value very much that you're very loyal to the person, but also sometimes the issues need to be addressed. And so I guess what I'm trying to ask is in terms of the bond and loyalty in the Army or in your relationships, have you ever seen it become like dangerous or in the form of toxic masculinity? Do you think the assumptions that are made about units like police, like firemen, like the trades, like the Army, in terms of those toxic masculinity platforms or ecosystems, do you think there are fair criticisms of those ecosystems?
So I do think that in any sort of organization, the Army, the trades, the emergency services even, there are toxic masculinity exists, but I don't think that it exists to the point that it's like overpowering. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think people will see an example of it and think that everyone's like that. Because to an outsider, like a layman, they'll see, I don't know, two soldiers doing something stupid, and they'll think, you know, the whole Army is like that, or the whole fire department's like that. That's why there's so much training on, like, how to act, how to treat the public, how to present yourself on media.
Mm-hmm.
But in my personal experience in the military, I haven't seen too many examples of toxic masculinity. The people that I surround myself with are like-minded like me, humble, they're very caring, they're not afraid to show their emotions, they don't take themselves too seriously. One of my friends, he's a sniper, and he went to Afghanistan as a sniper, and you'll talk to him and he's so normal, he's a happy guy.
Mm-hmm.
He is so humble, like so compassionate. You can really tell when he listens to you, like he interacts with you, even though he's done so many things in his life, right? There are some people that I know that'll base how they act with you or how they treat you based on your accomplishments and their accomplishments. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, you haven't done this, I'm not going to talk to you just because of that. And I think that's the most toxic I've seen it.
Interesting. Yeah, like just like, you haven't earned my respect, so I won't talk to you kind of thing.
Exactly.
Interesting. Because I've always found that fascinating too. And I don't think painting a industry with the broad stroke brush or whatever the phrase is fair to everyone. Like, I do think there are definitely moments where you're like, you as an individual, I would hope that you stood up for, you know, I guess what is right. But, you know, in also the sense, it's like you have a lot of friends who you'd do anything for. You'd protect them at their worst moments. Like, it's always a joke, like, oh, if my best friend killed someone, like, I'm grabbing the body bag and we're doing this together, right? Like, it's... Yeah. So I always find it really hard when people paint an entire industry or a way or an entire, gender or masculinity, I guess, in that one vein. And that's why when it comes to this podcast, I really want to talk to people from all industries to figure out what is going on within that industry or within that unit, which is why I was so fascinated to talk to you about the Army Reserves, because I think it is a place where, you know, you look at it, you're like, oh, you have to be strong, you have to be emotionally unavailable at times, you have to be able to put physical brutal force at the forefront, especially if you're overseas or actually in the you know, going to war. Like there's things that are asked of them that people like me, a normal civilian, I would never understand. Like I would consider myself a pacifist in 100% or 99% of situations. Mm. You know, personally, I would say that I would never go to war right now, but maybe if the time came where I had to go to war and protect the country, I might. Mm-hmm. But for right now, I don't see myself doing it. But I respect people that do go and choose to serve, especially like when they don't have to. And like, you know, a lot of these roles, they're very dangerous roles, like trades, mm-hmm. Police, firemen, ambulance. Like they're very high, emotionally taxing positions to have in society.
For sure.
So I guess like where I might lead with this question is, do you think it should be mandatory or whatnot to do therapy or you know, go through psychology training? Like, is that something that happens with you? Do you go through that as even a reserve or full-time? Like, is that something that is common?
Yeah, I think, I know that mental health training is very prominent in the Canadian Forces. Even if you haven't gone overseas, there's some individuals that may need mental health training, and no judgment, there's always a mental health hotline that's available. I'm sure for the emergency services, mental health is a big, big part of their training, just because of all the emergency scenes that they work on, all the things that they see. It's definitely, I can say that personally, I know that it's a huge part of the Canadian Forces.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of information, brochures given to me for mental health hotlines. There's a lot of stress, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the military, there's a lot of stress training. They'll say, I don't know, go get ready and shower and be ready for inspection in 5 minutes. You're like, 5 minutes? How can I do that? Obviously, that's a really small, you know, it's not going to stress you out as much as seeing other things.
Mm-hmm.
But there's training. That kind of training is to help you cope with stress, right? Cope with mental health. And I think that kind of training will help people will help people cope with mental stress, mental health when they're overseas.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's about.
So what are like some three things that you wish that people that weren't in the military knew about the military or were like learning, like three things that you learned, I guess, in the military or Army Reserves that you wish everyone learned?
That I wish everyone learned, I wish everyone knew about the Army Reserves, or that everyone,
I guess, applied to their life, like that, you know, three lessons that you made you go either wow or really had an impact on your outlook on life.
Oh, okay, I see what you mean. Yeah. So like three things that happened to me that I, through the Army Reserves, that I wish other people would.
Yeah.
Okay. I think being able to work with anyone, no matter what, you know, I'll say like what skin color they are, what gender they are, mm-hmm. what kind of personality they portray. Everyone in the Army is green.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
That's why we work so well together. I don't see anything else than a guy I can work with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people out there who just won't work with a certain type of person, and I think that's very limiting.
Yes.
Second thing, just being able to grow up quick.
Yeah.
You know, I've had to grow up real quick. I'm still pretty young. I'm turning 23 in November, but I feel like my life experience has given me quite a big boost on my maturity. I've lived by myself for 6 years. I've done a lot of things. Like, I go traveling alone. I backpack Cuba, and I backpacked France. Just to be able to, you know, be by yourself.
Yeah.
You know? Third thing, can't really think of it right now.
Okay, third thing we'll let you think of. But, you know, I guess moving away from the army now, we can move to traveling alone. And you touched on traveling alone and working with people that, you know, are different skin color or I guess different belief system as you. And those are two things I've been thinking about a lot recently, not in terms of skin color for working with people, but in terms of just like we had the Canadian election. And, you know, it seems like in the world right now, there's just a high sensitivity to different ideologies. And like, you know, we have Alberta and Saskatoon, or Saskatchewan, not Saskatoon, but Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
That voted like very conservative. And, you know, they want to separate, and or there's been all these conversations about it. I've always found the dilemma between conservatism and liberalism, I guess, very interesting in the sense that everyone assumes that if you're voting conservatism, it means you're racist or homophobic, and everyone assumes that if you vote liberal, you're like an emotional PC snowflake or whatever they call whatever the terms they are. And I'm like, there's more. Again, it's like the whole painting a whole voter or a whole person with that brush. And I just think, you know, if you look at Alberta and Saskatchewan, they do run on the oil sands and like the oil and gas industry, and like obviously they want to be supported by their country, and especially since they actually make a lot of the money for the economy, and they dump a lot of that money into other provinces that aren't as profitable. And then I think about that sense, but I also think in the same time, like, you as a provinces should know that the world's moving away from those two industries, and you can reskill to being more in the trades that promote, you know, greenhouse or like more green energies,
like eco-friendly.
Yeah, things. Like if you're talented enough and have the skills to go down in an oil mine and do oil rigs and whatnot, then you obviously have the capability to potentially help build windmills and like, you know, maybe work or build like nuclear power. Like there's other options, I guess, and there's not enough emphasis on the training on that. And it's just like there's so much, just seems to be so much conflict between working with people that think differently than you, look differently, act differently. So that's one. And then the second one I think you talked about was
traveling alone.
Like, man, I went to Japan on exchange. Yeah. And I was there with some friends for the most part, and I did a lot of traveling with them on weekends, but I did 2 weeks alone. I was actually, this time last year, I was in South Korea alone, and then I went to the Philippines alone for 2 weeks, and I also did a week alone in Japan. And like, those were like, honestly, the best travels I've ever had. Like, if I look back on how I've grown up, the thoughts of this podcast, the thoughts that have gotten me to where I am, and like the drive I now have and the future I've painted for myself, that all came when I was traveling alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people I met were interesting, but I think there is a lot of things you learn from being by yourself. And I wish a lot more of society, I guess, took that time. I was actually just talking to someone with this about this yesterday, about, you know, the fear that when you're alone, people are so scared of putting their head or thinking about the things that are very dark in their life. They're almost too afraid to confront their darkest thoughts, and so they don't heal from them, or they don't question them. They don't question why they're coming. So they just live this life of like shallow. It's, I don't want to call it shallow living, but it's like you don't really question those darkest thoughts. So you're always afraid of being alone. And then that's what kind of gives you that's what creates anxiety. I don't really think anxiety comes from being social. It comes from actually being alone. Like, I think social anxiety I'm not a doctor, again. I don't know anything. But, like, I think that is where a lot of this anxiety comes from, is the fear of being alone. And it just perpetuates this, like, weird cycle of being back and forth, of being scared to be alone, and you want to hang out with friends, but then, you know, you're scared of the judgment with your friends, so you're, and then you stay alone. But I'll switch this question finally to you. Anyways, like, what were some of the things that you learned being alone that have really impacted your life?
Yeah, so traveling alone, right? You know, you do whatever you want, when you want, with no one to answer to. Mm-hmm. You can do... I climbed the highest mountain in France. Like, it was the most amazing experience of my life. And I didn't have to ask anyone.
Yeah.
I just paid a guide and went with my friend who lives there. And, it was just amazing. But some stuff that I learned, be open to other cultures, you know, be open to the way things are in a place that you go. Do you know what I mean? Like, when you're here, there's a way to act. There's a way to speak to people. There's a way to do anything, like the social, cultural behaviors. And when you're there, wherever you are, there might be a different way to act or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure when you're in Japan, I know they're pretty big on, you know, manners and things like that.
Yeah.
So you can't, you're a visitor to their country, right? You can't just do anything you want. So yeah, being open to other people and respecting their culture.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, like, in a place like Cuba, where I went, you have to be very self-aware of your surroundings and also how you're acting, because obviously, look at my skin. I'm an Asian. I was like the only Asian in Cuba that I ever saw. And everyone knows that. They're like, oh, look, it's a traveler. Let's try and, you know, scam him or whatever. I'm not saying that they're all scammers. There are some.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have to be, you have to treat your security. You have to be aware of your security. For sure. I think that's some things that I brought back with me too.
Mm-hmm.
Being open to people, just people in general. I can speak to anyone and there's no, I'm not scared to speak with people, right? Also with the being open to the way things are, like the way things, what's the word for it? You know, when you...
Cultural... Like, accept? I don't know.
Cultural acceptance?
Just, like, societal norms, I guess, maybe?
Yeah. I found it really interesting coming back to Canada and seeing the differences.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's something to think about.
I definitely agree. I was just talking about this with someone, again, the other day, about how when I came back from Japan, the first thing you realize... Like, one of the first things you see when you come back from the airport to Toronto Pearson, I don't know if anyone's noticed, is just the lineup of wheelchairs.
Hmm.
Like, it's an insane amount of wheelchairs. And then that's the only time I really thought of it. And I was like, I didn't see a single wheelchair the entire time I was in Japan. Because I've heard things, I don't know if this is true or not, that they do hide the sick in Japan. Like, they don't want to show them out a lot because they don't want people to have a bad impression of their community. Not sure how accurate that is. That's something that I heard. I haven't fact checked it. From living in Japan for 4 months, I can see that that would be something that they do. However, they're also just extremely healthy there. Like, you know, it's not a lot of sugar. So when I was over there, I think I lost like 20 pounds just from the small portions, the lack of sugar, and I was like walking around a lot when I traveled. Yeah. So like the combination of those three things was, I think I lost like 25 or 30 pounds.
Oh,
and then but you just, you don't, like, you don't even really see people walking with canes. So it was only when I came back that I really was able to compare a lot of things. Like, when you're there, you realize for the first month you're comparing Canada to Japan, and then when you come back for the first month you're comparing Japan to Canada, and there's like different comparisons that you make when you come back. And it was almost a, I didn't really experience culture shock, or I guess like homesickness for my first 2 months in Japan. It was because I was just traveling a lot. I was really busy going to class. You're not really in the headspace of thinking I'm here for 4 months. But as soon as I thought I have two more months here, that's when I kind of got more homesick, I guess. But when you traveled, were you like living, were you staying in hostels? Were you like, or were you staying in hotels?
I stayed in, so in Cuba,
yeah.
There's places called Casa Particulares.
Okay.
And they're basically families that open up a room in their house to like travelers. And you'll know because they have a blue sign outside their door. So you actually, you literally just knock on it and ask like, do you have a room available?
Yeah.
And actually, when I was in Havana, I only stayed in Havana for one night. I knocked on the door and I was like, do you have a room available? They said no, but we'll help you find a room. So literally I was walking, like, it must have been like 20 minutes with this local. She was just knocking on people's doors that I guess she knew. It's like, hey, do you have a room available? Do you have a room available? This was Christmas Eve. Okay.
Cute.
So yeah, it's like a Christmas story, you know. Yeah. You can't find a place to have to stay in the barn. But no, she eventually found a place, and she was so nice. Like, she was like, "Yeah, I found a place for you. Now I'm gonna go home now."
Yeah.
I was like, "Okay, thanks a lot. I didn't really expect you to do that." But yeah, that's just like the culture that's there.
When you came back, did you think Canadians were as kind and nice as everyone makes them out to be in terms of the global perspective?
Oh, I always think Canadians are nice.
But when you came back, did you think, I guess when I was in Japan and in the Philippines and Korea, and even my other travels, like I've been to South Africa as well. I get that people think Canadians are nice. Because we are nice, and you know that's like the global perspective too in all these countries.
Yeah.
But I also found that, you know, these other countries are very nice people. Like in the Philippines, man, everyone there, the locals and whatnot, are just like the sweetest people. In terms of the hostel I stayed at, like the owner was a really nice guy. I think he gave me like a huge discount on the hostel because I stayed there for 4 nights and I paid like $12. And I don't think it was supposed to be that cheap, but him and I just randomly made friends with him. And the first night, I didn't know he was the hostel owner. The lady at the front desk was like the nicest person to me ever. And I don't, like, the Japanese are very nice people. I don't know if that's like just because they have to be nice and like that's what's expected of them. It is almost like creepy how nice they are, in the sense of like, you show some attitude, you know, get angry. So like there was a little bit of that part that I missed from Canada, the confrontation side of things. But it really shows you that, you know, Canadians are nice, but hell, a lot of the world's nice people.
Yeah.
Like, even America. I don't think a lot of Americans are like not nice.
I think they're just more outspoken. Like they'll speak their mind. Whereas,
Western, like Europeans, definitely outspoken too, thought. Like, because a lot of the people that were on exchange were from Europe. And I thought especially the French and the Spanish were very outspoken people in like really funny ways to me. But I definitely came back thinking Canadians are nice, but I would say on the scale of places I've been, like, we're not the nicest people.
I don't think we're the nicest.
No.
Definitely, but nice, nicer than some.
Yeah. But yeah, like in terms of being alone, you talked quite a bit about being alone too, on your travels, and you know, you have a lot of control over what you do. Kind of like, what were some thoughts that you had while you were alone? Like, do you actively spend a lot of time in those thoughts, or are you kind of just like, wandering around, and then whatever happens, happens.
I would say I do have some thoughts when I'm alone that I wouldn't have with someone else, but I just kind of wander around and take mm-hmm. things as they come. I'm not really a huge deep thinker, but when I was alone, you know, you feel really vulnerable, just because you don't have, you know, anyone to talk to or rely on. You don't have anyone helping you with anything. So I think that's something that people can benefit off of, is to explore their more vulnerable side while traveling alone, right? But no, for me, when I was traveling like France, I would just go out of my hostel and I would walk around for the sake of traveling, like seeing things. No, I have like a really short attention span, so I would look at something and say, oh, that's cool. I wonder when that was built. I wonder what it's for. Oh, hey, it's another building. That looks cool. But I wonder.
Yeah.
So I would more think like about what I was seeing. Mm-hmm. I'm not really inside my head that much.
Okay. And did you plan your days, or did you kind of just leave your hostel and go wherever you wanted to, like, go? Or was it, like, step-by-step itinerary?
I kind of planned my days the day of.
Yeah.
Or the night before. With the exception of the mountain climb. Like, I climbed the Mont Blanc. Like, when I was in Paris, I literally went somewhere to find Wi-Fi, and then I was like, what things to do around me?
Yeah.
I went to the Eiffel Tower. I stood in line for like 2 hours and then got in. That was one thing that I knew I wanted to go to. I wanted to go to the Louvre. I went to like a whole lot of museums when I was there. But no, I didn't really spend a lot of time like planning every single day. Like at 12, I'm going to eat lunch here.
Yeah.
I'm not that kind of guy.
Okay. And do you know French, or?
I know a little. I studied some in university.
Okay. Yeah. Because being homeschooled, I didn't learn French till grade 9.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was just in applied French, and I like with Miss Doak.
Oh, yeah.
And I spent 50% of the year in the bathroom, in the hallways of
the high school. Yeah. Actually, when I was in France, like, I tried to speak French to them, but they know that you're not local.
Yeah.
No, I learned Parisian French.
Okay.
They know you're not a local, and they'll just be like, just speak English.
Okay.
Yeah. It was kind of a shocker.
Yeah.
I'm here trying to practice my French, but I guess they don't want to hear your disgusting accent.
Yeah. I heard the same thing in Montreal, too, is I think my boss was having this conversation with me, too, about how, you know, he was there and he would try to speak French to the people in Montreal, and then they knew that he didn't speak French, so they'd just say, speak English.
Mm-hmm.
Or was my grandpa. I forget who it was. And because of the fact that these people, like, even though you wanted to learn French, they weren't going to speak French with someone that didn't know French fully.
Yeah.
So that they found it really hard to actually learn the language. Because even I think with French in Canada, it's, or in like provinces outside of Quebec, there's not really much need to speak French outside of French class.
Mm-hmm.
And because you go to the hallways, everyone's speaking English.
Yeah.
Like, so you don't actually really learn the language.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is, when I was on exchange, I was like, I wish I actually knew a different language, because I think I was the only kid in the entire. There was only three people or two people that didn't know another language, and we were both Canadian. Because in all of Europe, you learn like three or four languages from being there, right?
Yeah.
So I felt kind of ashamed, and everyone had to learn English to go to that school. And every course is taught in English, which is me. Like, I'm like the reason. Me and the other guy are like the main reason why everyone has to learn English. So I kind of felt like shit. Like, that was a perspective I learned. I'm like, man, us Canadians and Americans kind of suck for that reason. Is the whole world has to cater to our English, our English wants.
I love learning languages. Like, I think languages opened the door to so many things. Like, you can connect with people that you would never have even talked to.
Mm-hmm.
And just connecting with people opens a door to other possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I think it's one of the most useful things you can learn in your life.
100%. I agree. For my future kid, I'm going to put them in a class, in a language class, even if I don't know it, just so they can learn another language, because there's so many positive benefits to learning another language. Apparently, it helps your critical thinking. Like, you learn to think in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's like what people say about psychedelics. It opens different pathways to your brain or whatever. So I definitely in the future will have a very. I want to learn a different language. I'm just not sure which one. I was in Japan and I learned like two phrases. So I kind of
what.
One is osusume wa, which means what do you recommend?
Okay.
So if you go to a restaurant and they some of the best restaurants there don't have English menus.
Yeah.
And it's a nice way to find like what's a hidden gem in a lot of these areas.
Yeah.
So you say osusume wa, they speak Japanese to you back, and you just don't know what they're saying. I just said hi, which means yes, which means I'd get whatever they recommended.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what was another one? That was like really the main phrase I learned. I don't know if I actually learned anything else other than like sumimasen, which is like excuse me, arigatou gozaimasu, which is thank you. Of course they taught me all like the inappropriate words, which I won't, they're not even that bad. Like in Canada they're just normal words. Like ass is like oshite, and like that's a bad word there.
Oshite.
Yeah. And like baka is idiot.
It's idiot.
Yeah. So like if you say those words in public though, they're like, no.
Really?
Like sagoi, which is just wow. Like no, you can't say that. So yeah, I felt like shit for not learning another language.
You know what I think would be interesting is talking about masculinity with like a Japanese local, maybe teen or like young adult, because I think their perception on it like through their culture mm-hmm. might be very, very different from a Canadian's. Like they're very polite, and
mm-hmm.
I wonder what the media influences them, how that influences them.
Yeah, that should be interesting, because there's a couple of people from Japan that listen to this podcast that I still talk to, and they're, it's interesting, man. Japan's actually really interesting because there's a lot of Filipinos there that speak Japanese, but they're like Filipino ethnically. There's like a lot of Brazilian Japanese people, which would probably also offer another perspective.
Hmm.
And then there's the Japanese people who would also be very fascinating. Like, there's very few people from Japan that I know that speak like really good English to be like on this podcast, but there is actually one guy now that I think about it, named Shuhei, who was like the school administrator there, and he was like a lovely human being. He's like one of the favorite people I've ever met in my life. He was just such a nice guy, and he would actually be really interesting on that. So I wrote that down. And that is something I want to do in the future if this gets bigger, is actually travel the world. And I plan on doing like a huge backpack tour in 2 years, where I, like after I've paid back OSAP and whatnot, I go and I actually stay with some of my friends that I met on exchange, and I could like do couch surfing through Europe and then actually do the podcast with them. Like I do want to make it like a very global cultural thing. That is an idea I have for it. So, yeah, that's a good idea.
Kevin Toyo.
Oh, Kevin Toyonaga, yeah. He'd be a great one, too. Actually, I do have a Japanese friend. Oh, my goodness, now you mentioned it. He's Japanese, but he's like fifth-generation Japanese.
Mm.
His family's actually been, I think, in Canada longer than my family. but he's Japanese, and I actually lived with him for 4 months. All
right.
But he actually is like pretty stereotypically, like, I guess, Japanese in the very, like, you know,
the cultural sense.
Yeah, like hard-faced.
Okay.
He's a really funny guy, but you know, his natural resting face, I guess, is just like, I don't know how
he's
to describe
got
it.
RBF.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha.
Actually, Kevin Toyo would be a good one too. I actually reconnected with him this summer.
Man, I miss that guy.
He's still
hey,
funny.
Hey, Kevin, if you're listening, I want to hang out, okay? Don't I haven't forgotten about you.
I'll make sure to send that clip to him in Facebook or something like that. Cool. Yeah, I'll cut that.
I mean, we used to game together and stuff.
Yo, I've gamed with him like a while back in the summer when I was back on League of Legends. Okay. I haven't played in like 3 months since I actually got this job. I haven't played. I haven't touched it just because I have no time.
Yeah, it's tough to do anything else.
No, I know. Yeah. Even this like takes up a good amount of time. It's more the editing aspect than it is actually the interviewing aspect. Mm. But like I love both sides of it. And then yeah, like the hour and a half. It's about 3 hours of commuting a day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just to get to my job. And that takes up a lot of time as well, which sucks. But hopefully I'll get back there. But yeah, Kevin Toyo would be a good one. And same with my other friend and like even the Japanese guy. But I did have a question I wanted to ask you earlier that I forgot to in regards to other cultures as well. And it's more to do in terms of the Army Reserves. Like, you know, Singapore... I believe has a mandatory 2-year enrollment or whatnot in the military. Israel is another country that has it too. Do you think there's like a lot of pros to that in terms of developing character, growing up fast? Like, you know, Singapore and Israel are actually two of the most, I think, economically strong countries in the world, especially in the startup world nowadays. With just like the amount of talent they're pumping out into the world, like what's your perspective on having that mandatory enrollment?
I think mandatory enrollment it's beneficial. I think so. Just going off of my personal experience and all the things that I've learned, all the life experience that I've obtained, I think if everyone in society, in our society, had that and they experienced, you know, being in a team, being working with people you don't know, accepting everyone, having that sort of leadership, like the chain of command, and respecting leaders or respecting authorities even, I think it would be make our society pretty efficient. You learn to be very efficient, very hardworking. I don't see it happening in Canada.
Yeah.
For sure. But just like if we were to create a Sims world where everyone had that, I think it would be very efficient and beneficial.
Yeah. Interesting. Beyond efficiency, I guess, what would you say are like the greatest takeaways from having a society like that?
I think everyone would know that people had the same experiences as them, and they'd be able to connect, have a stronger connection through that.
Mm.
Like if you don't have anything to talk about, it's like, hey, how was your experience with the military? Or, oh man, on this course, this happened. It was so funny. Oh, hey, do you remember Sergeant blah, blah, blah?
Yeah.
Like
a lot of potential mutual contacts, too.
Yeah, just the connections between people.
Interesting. I actually remember having a conversation with someone that actually talked about this idea of there's no real Canadian identity anymore. It's like, sure, we're very diverse people, but in a lot of ways, we've lost a lot of that that common identity in terms of who we are is like we don't really have a lot of nationalism. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that pisses me off about America is that they have too much nationalism. So like what's the balance of that? But you know, even in my own life recently I've been thinking, you know, I come from a very Christian home, and you know, nowadays I'm not a believer and I don't subscribe to like any religion. But there is a beautiful thing about knowing that 70% of the world, or whatever the number was, you know, was Christian. Like there's this beautiful thing about knowing that other people prescribe to the same ideology as you, or you know, the same faith. And now it's very split up between, you know, Muslims, Hindus, you know, all the different religions. Which is nothing bad about that. That's not what I'm getting at, but it's just nowadays being a melting pot, there is so much disruption, I guess, of idea, and there's not really that one common religion or you know, concept that really brings a lot of people together. So I actually really like that you brought up the idea that, you know, this, there would be this one central notion that everyone has in their life.
Right. Like if there's so many things that keep us apart in this life, like religion,
yeah,
culture, race, that, you know, a common thing would, something that ties together.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah. The only other thing that we all have, I would say, is that we're all alive.
Yeah.
Like, we all have arms and, well, not even all of us have arms and legs, but we're all, everyone that's on Earth is alive. Like, that's, I guess, the only other tying feature to human connection. Yeah. And I, even going back to what you said earlier in terms of, you know, going through the same things shows, builds vulnerability with each other.
Sure.
Like, you know, you said you're in the trenches. You know you can be vulnerable with him because you're going through the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it, even when you were talking about it earlier, ironic that it's either people that have gone through the exact same thing or total strangers that seem to be the most vulnerable with each other. In the sense, it's like, you know, Humans of New York. It's able to pull the most vulnerable aspects of people because they're like, I'm never going to talk to this person again. Or you're vulnerable with the person that you shared the exact same experience with. And it doesn't really, it's almost like there's not really much in between those two things. It's like complete opposites of experiences in terms of everything together and nothing together. And it's like there's this huge gap in the middle of being vulnerable with people, which is something I've reflected even while you were talking, like throughout this whole time about that. So I actually do, even though I wouldn't want to be in the army or do that kind of thing, I do actually have a lot of appreciation for that. And I know someone that was on a trip to Israel recently, and him and I had a conversation about how that ties a lot of people together. And, you know, if you're in an interview and it's a, you know, it's an Israeli guy or a Jewish guy interviewing you, that there's that common experience there, you've been through, right?
Yeah. Even with different countries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I really value that answer. I guess, you know, we're an hour in. That kind of flew by. But
it was the beer.
Yeah, it was the beer. Yeah. It was the Corona sponsored by... No, I won't say sponsored by Corona because not true. I guess I'll go to some of the questions I sent you beforehand.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of covered a lot of them. But, you know, you were in the Army Reserve. You talked a lot about growth there. You did a lot of the... You know, you're an infantryman. You did a lot of the classes and workshops, I guess, that got you to different levels, like parachuting, and whatnot. You've been a music teacher, you've traveled alone, you're in a relationship?
Yeah,
you're in a relationship.
2 years in like a week.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
But so in terms of, you know, your next stage of growth, you've experienced a lot. You've talked about how you've matured at a fast pace throughout living alone. The growth has been a huge talking point for you throughout this hour. Where do you feel like your next stage of growth as a man, as an individual, as a person comes from?
I mean, my next stage of growth would definitely be when I get a job as a firefighter.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe when I propose to my girlfriend. And I think it takes a... Takes a lot of balls to propose to someone.
Yeah.
You're saying you want to be with them for your whole life. And I think I will need to grow a lot to do that. But in doing so, it will propel me to a new understanding of myself.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when I get a job as a firefighter, I'll be experiencing so many different, I'll have so many other different experiences that I think intrinsically I'll be very like self-aware, especially for my mental health it's just a new, I plan to be a firefighter for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the people you meet in your department or in your station even, you're with them for, with like the same four people for however long, right? I think that being together as a family like that, like making a new family, can make you grow a lot more as an individual and also as a, you know, quote unquote family.
Yeah.
Those are probably the two next big pushes that I'll,
yeah,
that I'll experience.
Yeah. I always find it really interesting too, as I talk to guys about this, it's like very different for everyone, but also, you know, all the time growth, everyone has made it the point of this is like growth will come from moving into the unknown,
yeah,
into the darkness, right? And like that's something that I've really tried to push in my life too, is like I need to start walking into the unknown. With this podcast, that's something I've done. You know, today I signed up for Good Life Fitness. Like I've never been a huge fitness guy and don't really care for it, but like I actually want to start putting that discipline in my life. Like the one thing I really wish I had more in my life was discipline. And everyone I've heard that's been in the army, like, or army or reserves or anything like that, has said how discipline is like one of the major things you learn.
Yeah.
And so I'm definitely trying to build that in my own life, but
it's tough. Yeah. Starting at a gym is tough for sure.
And I've had moments like it before, but like now I'm working full time, so I actually feel more successful. I'm doing a podcast, which like again like ups my self confidence. And then there's a gym in my, like there's a Good Life in my building where I work. Mm. There's really no excuse for me not to go.
Yeah.
So I just have to start going, and now I've paid. And it's like a corporate membership too, which makes it really cheap comparison to anything else. So yeah, like discipline is definitely something that I'm trying to work on. But yeah, I'm excited for your two stages of growth. That's,
yeah, me too.
That's exciting. Will your girlfriend listen to this episode, or have you talked?
Oh, she knows.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, good. I don't want to spoil anything or anything like that. You know, and then I guess I'll move on to the last question, because I think we touched on a lot of this other stuff. Actually, I guess I'll go to this one in the sense of how much would you say you love yourself in this current stage? Like, what has your been progression through that stages and through your life of coming to terms with who you are and loving that who you are?
I would say I love myself to a point that I'm happy with who I am, but I do feel like there's things that I've missed out on. Like I don't have a great social life. I've kind of fallen out, or not fallen out, but just I haven't been in contact with a lot of old friends. There isn't really a friend group that I hang out with regularly, and I think that's in part due to my goal-oriented personality. Like when I focus on something, I just do it. Like I do it nonstop. I don't stop to hang out with friends or anything.
Yeah,
because I just view that as wasting time. So I think that's something that I kind of hate about myself. Is just don't really have much of a social life now.
Yeah.
But I do love my goal-oriented personality, because I feel like it helps me propel to the next level when I need to.
Mm-hmm.
There's things I love and hate about myself, but I'm okay with.
Yeah.
I'm okay with who I am.
Yeah, that's dope. I definitely relate, I think, a lot to that social circle, because until recently, I don't think I've had that either.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole reconnecting with people, like, I've had an amazing summer for that, the last 4 months of that, and it's just been very random. Even, you know, you reaching out to me.
Yeah.
You know, I had Kevin Toyonaga and that group reach out to me in the summer as well, like Narth and Ann. Running into people on the train downtown. Mm-hmm. Like it's interesting where I've run into people and reconnected with them, and then so like that's one part where it's just happening naturally, and then two, being intentional about it as well, messaging back. And like, you know, that's one of the things I love about Instagram the most, is that you can, you know, people will say it's not social, but it's whatever you make of it. And if you respond to stories asking people to like go out for drinks with them or something, or like catch up, I find that most of the time people will say yes.
Yeah.
So You know, if you're
social, if you make it social,
exactly.
If you don't, I don't know, like check your DMs, and you're literally just posting for other people to see. It's literally just like a billboard of
Exactly. My DMs are like what I spend the most time on Instagram, mm-hmm. is like actually making plans or communicating with people.
I'm not a big social media guy, so.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of weird that I
messaged me.
That I messaged you, yeah. Yeah. I think it was like early in the morning, and I was making breakfast, and I was like listening to your podcast because you upload early in the morning.
Yeah.
And I was just like, hey, this is sick. Let me message him and say it's cool, because I think that will make his day better.
Yeah, it definitely did. It 100% did. Like, you know, shout out to everyone who's given me like words of encouragement. Everyone that's done it has been like extremely amazing, and it's come from places that I would never expected. Mm-hmm. Like yourself, like friends I hadn't talked to for 3 years. And that has 100% been the most beautiful thing to me. So even though like my last like recording got like 10 listens or whatever compared to the start, it's like I'm not even doing this for anyone else, really. Like, even you being in the army, like I've always been fascinated by that, and I think you're the only person I know in the army or in the reserves that was part of that. And I'm like, I'm really fascinated by that. So, you know, I like human connection. And you know, Godwin, if you ever want to go and get a drink or sometime, like literally anytime, like I'm always down to do that. So let's do
me
it sometime.
Too. Yeah, for sure.
And then my last 3 points that I close off with everyone.
Yeah.
Something your father or a male mentor told you growing up.
I think, well, my dad, right? He has 3 master's degrees.
Wow.
And he worked for IBM as a salesman for many, many years, and now he's a pastor. I grew up in a Christian family as well. He always told me to never stop learning. Even if, you know, getting degrees is not always just about the next job you get, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's about your knowledge. Like, it's knowledge is everything. And I think he just has such an impressive outlook on life that comes from all this knowledge he's acquired. And that's why he told me never stop learning, because I think when you have that kind of knowledge, you're able to see things differently than, like, for example, what I would see right now. I think never stop learning is the number one thing, and people can take it how they will. I think it's kind of a general thing.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean get 3 master's degrees, but it can mean something different to everyone.
Yeah, 100%. Life.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I'd ever go back to school, but at the same time, you know, I work with a friend who's like, I use lynda.com, and this guy is one of the smartest people I've ever met. Chris, if you're listening, dude, you're really smart. But like, he's just continually teaching me stuff every day, and like, you definitely have to surround yourself with people that are like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Continually learning, that's a good one. Something you wished your father told you growing up.
I wish my father told me growing up. I wish he would have given me more information about, you know, I don't even know how to say it, like, the negative things about growing up. What, like, drugs and drinking and what happens at parties and things like that. But I always grew up in a very Christian family, and all they really talked about, he told me, like, the world is, when you get out of school and we stop living here in Markham with us, the world is not what you think it is. It's a very it can be very bad at times, you know. I wish he gave me more of a perspective on that rather than kind of just imposing his Christian ideologies all the time.
Yeah. I think I can relate to that quite a bit, because my dad was also a pastor. He's not, like, that's not his career anymore, but I definitely relate to the fact, like, that it's really hard for me to relate to my parents' perspective on the world. And it's like, sometimes I wish they were able to just remove the religious aspect from it and just tell me what it was without that spiritual, like, sense.
Just tell me, like, straight up what you've experienced. Like, tell me if you, I don't know, smoked weed or something.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, just be real, you know.
Yeah, I agree. And, like, I feel like sometimes there's, like, too much cloaking with how you're supposed to pull or see, like, the God and everything, or God's will and everything. Mm-hmm. It's like, that doesn't apply to me. Mm-hmm. So it's really not useful information. I wish, like, it's hard because, like, that's the world that they see. But that I wish they could, like, secularize it a bit more for me. Or
that's,
like,
the word I was looking for, secular.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So I definitely relate to that point. And then something that you want to tell your kids growing up, or like a life lesson that you want to instill in your kids.
Mm. Well, okay, something I'm very grateful to my parents for is that they let me do what I want, right?
Mm.
Who lets their kid join the army at 16?
Yeah.
Like, who, you know, the stereotypes about Asians having their kids become lawyers or doctors or whatever. I studied music, and now I'm not even pursuing a career in that. Although I am thinking of starting a music teaching business when I'm a firefighter, just because you have so much time off. I really appreciated how they supported me in everything I chose to do. And I think that's what I'm going to instill in my kid when they grow up.
Mm.
I want them to pursue their passions. I want them, with the exception of, like, things that I know are negative, you know, I don't want, if their passion is, like, growing weed or like selling drugs, I don't really want them to do that. But if they come up to me, it's like, Dad, I love surfing. I could go for it, man. Like, I'll take you to your surf lessons. I'll whatever, even though we don't really have that here. That, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to support them in what they want to do. And I don't want to be like, you have to be a doctor.
Yeah. Blah, blah. Yeah. Definitely, like, never settle. Cause I think something that I've learned is, like, it's a world of opportunity, and so many people settle, which actually makes it so much easier for those who pursue to get what they want. Like, I'm reading this book right now, and it's literally about this guy who actually, I literally bought it like 3 months ago, and for whatever reason, I picked it up this morning, and I was reading it on the GO train, and it's about a guy who's, you know, trying to get into the dating world,
mm-hmm.
and he's actually 23 in the book. He was homeschooled till grade 9. He grew up in a Christian home.
Yeah.
He was really awkward when he started dating. Like, it just speaks to me in so many ways. And now I can see I'm going to probably go home tonight, find out what his email is, and ask him to be on the podcast. I believe it will happen. Like, when I say I think Terry Crews will be on this podcast, I mean Terry. I think it will happen. There's so many people that out there that don't leverage things like their age. I think, you know, being this young, we're 23,
mm-hmm.
You know, you can leverage aspects of your life to get those things that you want. You know, masculinity is an up-and-coming topic. Terry Crews has been talking about it for 5 years before it was really trendy. If I say, like, hey, I'm a 23-year-old guy really interested in masculinity, and I really want to talk to you about it, can I have you on my podcast? I think he'll say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that, I don't know. It might be super naive, but it's just, like, a belief that I have.
Also, masculinity at like, different ages.
Yeah.
You know, he might be very interested in masculinity in their early 20s.
Yeah.
Whereas if a 45-year-old guy is like, hey, I'm talking about masculinity, let's talk.
It's like, yeah.
Maybe not.
Yeah, exactly. So I just think never settling is something I never want to settle, and I think that's what a lot of people have been here saying is, like, you know, I want to help my kid figure out what they want. I think what it comes down to is telling your kid, like, never settle. And not in the sense of, like, oh, you know, you'll never find success, but, like, once you find that thing that you love, you know, I think things that you love changes all the time. Mm-hmm. I used to, like, want to be an NHL player. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be an NHL player anymore. Like, it would be really cool, but that has changed. Like, it's obviously not reasonable.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And
I don't mean for sure, like, it would never happen, but I'm just agreeing with you. I'm thinking about what happened in my life.
Yeah. And so, like, I definitely think that is a really important lesson that everyone wants to teach their kids. And like, right on, man. I definitely love the stay learning. Mm-hmm. You got to teach your kid to be grateful. I think that's something that I'm trying to work through right now in my life. Is I felt, you know, I obviously come from a very upper middle class home. I've been very privileged in my life, and sometimes it makes me feel like ungrateful, and I don't want to live a life of ungratefulness. That's something I'm trying to work through right now too. So I definitely appreciate you bringing that up too, because I felt bad saying I don't want to ever come across as ungrateful to my parents.
Yeah,
for what they've done. But it's
for sure.
There's obviously those frustrations too.
Yeah, I wanted to be a magician when I was, like, I don't know, 10, and my parents, they bought me all these, like, DVDs and cards and stuff, and I would show them magic tricks. And it was like, I'm looking back at it now, it's like, why did you do that? It's like, oh, because you wanted to, like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You
know? Like, it
wow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
They invested in you to see that you were happy, and then that you shared those moments with them too. Mm-hmm. Like, it's as much for them, I guess, as it was for you. Like, I definitely, like, love that aspect of, that's what I'm excited about in my future too, is, like, getting my kid, investing in him or them, and then, you know, having them share that with me, like, very excitedly. Like, those are moments I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, but, me too.
Yeah. Anyways, that's like an hour and 25 minutes. So, I'll let you go now, Godwin, but I really appreciate you coming out here, sharing your experiences about the Army Reserves, you know, traveling alone, being a music teacher. We didn't really get too much into that. But, you know, I learned a lot about your experiences, where you are now, where you've been since high school. We could probably dive deeper into the whole coming from a Christian home thing. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Just not enough time.
But, you know, over dinner, over drinks sometime, like, I'd love to dive into that more, because that's something I've been exploring recently too.
We're both working in Toronto.
Yeah. So I really appreciate you coming out. I think this is a top tier episode. And
sweet.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have everyone hear it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I really enjoyed talking to you. It was nice catching up.
Yes.